Hello and welcome to the TAA Audio Conference, 5 Key Strategies to Boost Writing Power and Productivity, presented by Danelle Stevens. Stevens is a professor of curriculum and instruction at Portland State University. She received her doctorate in educational psychology from Michigan State. Her research and writing interests lie in identifying and studying ways for all educators to be more effective and productive in their professional life. She is the author of 3 books, including Journal Keeping, How to Use Reflective Writing for Learning, Teaching, Professional Insight, and Positive Change. Danelle will be answering questions at the end of her presentation. To ask a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad, and you will be put into the question queue. I now turn the session over to Danelle.
Hello out there. I see all your names on this list, and I would like to, first of all, congratulate you for doing the right thing on the path to academic publishing, which is to begin to learn more about the process and learn from people who've also struggled along the way to continue and to start and to kind of jumpstart academic writing. I've been in the academy for 28 years, and as Kim said, I've written 3 books. I'm working on a 4th book, which is the second edition of a book on rubrics, which has sold 24,000 copies, to my surprise and delight. But mostly my surprise and delight because I'm really happy that people are using rubrics to communicate their expectations to students. So I've also written about 22 or more articles and a number of conference presentations. Just like you, no one has told me how to write these books or the articles. I had to figure it out all by myself. I was not an English major, and yet I was, as you are, expected to write. So it was very important for me to try to take on this challenge in my academic career. And I'd also like to talk about what fires my motivation in this work. First thing that fires my motivation is I'm just curious, and I wanted to figure out a number of years ago, particularly after I finished my dissertation, in the process of writing it, I wanted to figure out how to write better and to write more, and no one was there to teach me, so I had to develop some of my own strategies, and some of the strategies I will teach you today. And essentially, I became a student of writing in order to improve my own writing. The second thing that fuels my motivation to do this work is some anger at the academy itself. Because, you know, they throw you out there, they hire you and promote you on the basis of basically one thing, whether you publish and contribute to some institutions are different, I imagine that, but publishing is really the coin of the realm, and if you can get a handle on that, many other things go much more smoothly. But it's almost reprehensible to me that the university asks you to do these things, and even in your dissertation, and yet no one teaches you how to do it. So I feel part of my job is to figure this out, and hopefully I can translate some of what I've learned and what I've read about and studied to others so that it's not quite such a challenge for them. And the other is that is to build a writing habit. The thing that fires me is to try to figure out how to build this habit for myself and for others. And what I've realized is it's really not a problem of capacity or brain power or sort of talent in terms of writing. In many ways, it's a strategic problem. And so that's why I've developed these 5 strategies and written about them and also studied them in my work. And I'd like to tell you a little story. First of all, you see a picture there on the agenda page, number 3, of a little red wagon. I think what I will do is I will read, I wrote about it this morning in my journal. It's a story I tell often, but I decided I would write about it, and this is what I wrote. Well, I like challenges in my life. Writing has always been a challenge. I have always sought to figure it out because I knew it was the key to success in the academy. And I wanted to overcome the blocks, the fears, and the confusions I had. No one taught me to write. In fact, my experience in high school English and college affirmed that writing was this mysterious thing that others did. And imagine that that and imagined that the others even enjoyed. That was unimaginable to me. It was mysterious. It was like it was in a black box. And it goes back for me to Miss Cullen and the Little Red Wagon. I was in high school, of course, and I was searching for the things I was good at and the things that where I would continue in college to pursue. And in English class one day, Miss Cullen handed back some writing that I had done. It was a paragraph about a little red wagon. She read it to the class and announced that it was an A. Very good, was her feedback. I said to myself, and I can still remember saying this, I will never major in English. And you may ask why. Well, I did get a good grade, but the fact that I produced an A-worthy paragraph was a miracle. I had no idea how I did it. The feedback I received also gave me no clues, nothing about descriptive adjectives, nothing about active action verbs, nothing about topic sentences, nothing. I was totally doubtful, given the feedback I did receive, that I could repeat this miraculous performance. I figured if this is how people succeeded in English, more power to them. It was not for me. I turned my head to math and science. Now, that was one of the things, ideas that I had about writing early on, and then I found myself in the academy having to write. So part of one of the strategies that I have is to explore some of those early notions about what is writing and explore them as assumptions so that you can begin to unpack them and create a new set of assumptions about writing. Next thing I'd like to talk about a little bit are the theories that undergird my work. And the reason I want to talk shortly about theories is that these are the basic fundamental notions and explanations of why what I've been talking about works and seems to make sense to a lot of people. The first thing is about academic writing production, and you may have heard of this before. In order to write, you have to write. You must begin to write in order to be a better writer. And so I always think of that as practice. Practice the verb leads to practice the noun. It's like running, cycling, or cooking. You can't get good at any of those skills without practice. So in terms of running, even if it's cold, it's rainy, it's you're uninspired, you feel dull, you have no energy, you're unmotivated, you still every day have to go out and run and continue running despite all of those negative feelings and energy levels. And the same thing with writing. The way to begin to write is to write and to practice. And the more you practice, the better you get. And at the end of it, you will have a writing practice. And it will be something that you do every day, if mostly every day, and most days of the week. And you will find that you will be rewarded, certainly in the academy, for having that writing practice. The second part is not just to have the writing practice, but to reflect on it and rewind. Most of us are so into fast forward that we don't go backwards and review and reflect. And what we know about adult learners is the way for them to have a satisfying life is to spend time reflecting and observing themselves. There's a story of Peter Elbo, who wrote a book called Writing Without Teachers, and he found himself being stuck in writing. He was an English major in high school, and he was a professor, but he found that he just wasn't writing, and his writing was stiff and tight. And so he observed his own writing, sort of what some people call metacognition. He thought about what he was doing, and every time he found himself writing, enjoying it, producing ideas that made sense to him, he made a little note, and he put that note in his pocket, and then he put them in his desk drawer. And gradually, through that process, he began to understand more about himself as a writer, and he ended up writing the book, Writing Without Teachers, and that book is a classic. It's in 73, and it's very well known as a book that changed a lot of the notions about about writing. And the third theory is, and then that was about reflection. So the first one was about academic writing production, the second is reflection, and third is attributions. Attributions are what we say to ourselves when we describe our past behavior. So if we say to ourselves that what we succeeded because we tried hard, or if we say to ourselves we succeeded because we were we had good strategies, or we are smart, or other people helped us, or luck, all of those are called attributions. And some of those work well and help you predict and help you improve future behaviors. But in order to, and I have much more to say about this, but I'm not going to say it in this session, is in order to circumvent some of the problems with like effort attributions, is to talk about strategy attributions and to attribute your success or failure to having a good set of strategies that help you run even though it's rainy and cold, for example. The strategies that get you moving and get you writing, and that trumps all of the other kinds of attributions, and it leads to more production. So those are the theories that undergird my work. And then three assumptions. The first assumption is that writing is thinking. And many people say that, but writing is not what, and I never actually knew that until I started studying writing, that writing is what produces thoughts and thinking. It is not what is done after thinking. So in order to get a lot of your ideas out there, you have to write, and then you begin to know what you know through that writing. In addition, academic writing is a conversation. It is a conversation in writing, but it also is a conversation face-to-face. So I use conferences, I use roundtables and conferences, I use opportunities to talk to people to seed and feed my ideas. And then strategic practice builds a writing habit. And I talked about strategies. I talked about practice, and strategic practice in particular allows you to internalize some assumptions, internalize some positive assumptions and positive behaviors that will get you writing. Let's go through our five strategies, and I will go down, read them all to you now, and then I will go through each one in turn, paying more attention to certain ones than others because I can see where our time is now. First of all, know yourself as a writer. Second of all, keep a journal or a log in your professional life. Third, become a student of writing. Fourth, identify some academic writing frameworks. And five, find others to hold you accountable. Let's go through the first one. Know yourself as a writer. That means that you have to kind of uproot some way the beliefs and behaviors you have around writing now. You become observant, not judgmental, but observant of what you do in order to sort of figure out what other strategies you might do to get yourself writing. Robert Boyce has a wonderful questionnaire in the back of his book, Professors as Writers. It's called a writing block questionnaire. And in that, he talks about certain things you might be saying, showing others you believe about writing, overt signs of writing, of blocking, your cognitive emotions in blocking, and your social skills in terms of writing. And then from that, he comes out with some scores that help you identify which area of those is your strength and which is your weakness. And also, he then takes those and goes through these seven different basic writing block traits, shall we say, that prevent you in many ways from writing, and also just saying what you know and sharing what you've learned with others. So mine is impatience. I call her Irma, actually. She's called Impatient Irma. And when I get to a point in my writing and I see her, she starts saying, come on, you want to be done. Let's get done here. Why is this taking so long? I have to say, okay, I have to get a plan to how I'm going to actually finish this project by writing good goals. So so that it just doesn't end up that I send out something that is going to be rejected, but it is much better than it would have been if I had just sent it out and not thought about it. So mine tends to be impatience. I'm not a perfectionist so much, and I'm not a procrastinator, but I get impatient at some point, so I watch out for that trait jumping into my life. The second thing I've learned through time and with my work with Joanne Cooper is that keeping a journal or a log actually helps you very strategically reflect on your writing practice and also generates ideas. A journal, as I wrote a book on journal keeping, so helps you collect your ideas, helps you organize your life, practice ideas, and it affirms that you have something to say, that you are. And the other thing is, when you're writing in a journal, you're writing. I take my journal to all conferences. I use it in my class with my students. When they write in their journal, I write in my journal. And sometimes that's when some good ideas come out that I need to use in my writing, in my work. And there's a whole raft of different strategies you can use and practice in your journal that then become part of my work. And one of the strategies I use to really get use my journal well is to I make a table of contents in the front of my journal after I've finished it, so therefore I can see the areas where things I've collected at conferences or other ideas. And then I photocopy those pages, and when I have to write an article, I photocopy all the pages where I've gotten insights about the article or about the research, and I use those as seed ideas for that article, and it works very well that way. The next strategy, strategy number three, is become a student of writing. And I actually had to do this because no one taught me how to write, really, and particularly academic writing. So I decided, well, I'm just going to read what people have written about writing, and there's some names here on this page of people who have some significant work in that area. But I'm always looking out for ways and new ideas and new strategies for me to use that will keep me writing, keep me interested in writing. And this is where it really becomes a strategic challenge. Sitting, not saying, oh, I just have to think of what I'm going to write, but actually setting goals, monitoring your progress. People talk about graphs, charts. I do that myself. And it kind of just keeps me on track. It allows me to say, oh, I am making progress. Oh, I am doing some work. Oh, I have written 300 words today. Okay. And then also there's an opportunity to stop strategically as well. Oh, I've written 500 words today. Oh, no, I don't need to write anymore. Tomorrow I'll pick this up. And I keep the ideas generating and going, and I don't binge. But I have a way to chart and graph and log and count, as I have said here. Count words, count time, monitor my progress. And this is that metacognitive piece of really finding out what works for you and keeping a positive viewpoint and affirmation that I'm making progress. And sometimes you need to avoid the negative self-talk and have positive talk, and you can. The data is right there in front of you. You are writing. You are getting things done. Also, Peter Elbow talks about this, and I know this is true for me too. Is sometimes those, you know, writing sessions where you write for half an hour, and I use a kitchen timer. Sometimes during that time, I am surprised about what I wrote. And there's nothing more affirming than that in terms of continuing writing. Peter Elbow would say that is the one thing that keeps people writing, is surprise. And when they're surprised, oh, I didn't think about that. I didn't know I knew that. Wow, that's an interesting connection. I should write that. I need to include that. And that keeps your writing fresh and alive, and it gives you voice. And you feel that your creative juices are flowing. And so some of these strategies lead to those kinds of insights The journal does that, journal activities, as well as keeping a log and also setting word limits. Someone once said, or Virginia Woolf said, that she always had to fight the house cleaning goddess when she was writing, because there was always, the goddess was wanting her to go out and do the dishes and do the laundry and not write. And so we have all of these voices in our head, and sometimes these strategies derail or silence those voices. I'll get my metaphor straight. Silence those voices. Strategy number four is something you won't see much in the literature, but is a very powerful strategy, and I call it trying to understand the language of the tribe. And what I mean is that academic writing has its own structures, its own text structures. In English, I think they call it discourse analysis. I call it text structure analysis. And what that, in this strategy, what you're doing is you're going outside yourself and you're trying to understand what is it exactly this journal article looks like. How many words is it? Does it have an abstract? So you actually do an analysis of what I call a text structure analysis of that article. And how many references are there? Does it have, what is the tone? Does it have subheads? Sort of figuring out what is the language, the structure of the text that I'm expected to write. And when you're doing this, why would you do this? Why would you try to figure out what this is? And the way, first of all, let me tell you, the way to do it is to get two or three articles from a journal that you want to publish in. Take those articles, and then you're going to do some metacognitive analysis. It is not so much the content as it is the way the article is structured. And how long is it? How many references are there? What kind of references are there? What is there an abstract? Does it have figures and tables? Does it use sidebars? All of that helps you sort of hone your writing to that audience. Then get another journal that maybe is not as rigorous as that one, and do the same kind of an analysis. And what that does, it gives you, you begin to see how people structure their writing in this field. You can see, I also know that students feel when they do this in faculty, when I've worked with them, that, oh, this is doable. Well, that's not quite as long an article as I thought it was going to be. Oh, they only spent one page on the lit review. Oh, I can put my survey in there. Oh, and I could, you know, so they begin to see that this writing is reasonable and doable, and it saves them time. In addition, there's some wonderful work by Graffin Berkenstein called an Academic Write, They Say, I Say, The Moves That Matter in Academic Writing. It's a book they wrote. And they have come up with some templates that are help you sort of set, make a good academic argument. And people have said that one of the main reasons that journal articles are rejected is because they don't have an argument. They are actually not part of a conversation where somebody agrees and disagrees, but they are actually a statement, like a report of, this is what happened and this is what I did and this is what I found out. So in order to have an article that a journal article that people want to read, it needs to fit into the language of academic writing. I'll give you an example of one template. In discussions of X, one controversial issue has been blank. On one hand, blank argues blank. On the other hand, X or Y, Z, or someone contends blank. Others even maintain this. My own view is this. So it kind of sets you in the middle of the conversation, the academic conversation. And sometimes using that kind of template helps you sort of understand where your work fits in with other people's work. And those templates are very powerful. And that's part of the language of the tribe that, once again, no one taught me, but I'm learning now and wanting to pass on to others. The last strategy, and I can see I'm coming up against the time when we can answer questions, is be accountable to others. And there's a lot of conversation about that and a lot of details about that out in the literature now, but it's a very important. And one of the things you'll notice about these strategies, if you go down the five, is that they start with the self, know yourself as a writer, keep a journal, that's sort of an exterior writing about yourself, then become a student of writing, find out what others are saying about writing, then also put yourself in the academic framework for writing, and then work with others, and so you're moving from self to other in the process of using these strategies. And lastly, I'd like to say is why strategies? Well, I feel the strategy attributions are powerful. This is not a strategic, this is a strategic problem, not a capacity problem. And during the process of implementing these strategies, it gives you something to think about and builds that kind of metacognitive knowledge about writing so you feel you are more in control. And it begins to develop a writing practice, the noun. Practice, the verb, leads to practice. The noun, and you can have a writing practice. Okay, thank you very much for your time. And I guess we'll have some questions now, Kim?
Yes, thank you, Deno. You can ask a question by pressing 1 on your phone keypad. That'll put you in the question queue. Right. Richard Fontaine. Go ahead and ask your question, Richard.
Hello, Richard.
Oh, hello. Sorry, I started already. Thanks for the excellent presentation. The question I have is, so I struggle with, in reference to productivity, one of the things I struggle with is because I want to get started, so I'll do freelance writing, and I'll write just to get started, just to get going. And then afterwards, when it comes time to revision, I seem to be so disorganized that I waste so much time, and I'm wondering if I shouldn't start with a bit of an outline before, and it's a real productivity issue for me. And then I get frustrated because I can't put things together.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, one of the little tricks I have with that is using Post-its and getting those ideas that I do in my free writing and putting one idea per Post-it and then organizing those into some sort of a framework that then I can write from that and do what I call a focused free write.
Focused.
Does that make sense?
That's great. Thank you very much. Just quickly, too, just to clarify, when you do your journal writing, will you journal write handwriting or by computer?
I do it handwriting.
Okay.
And I have some feelings about that, some thoughts about that. In fact, somebody was going to give me a research article on that too, is that handwriting mimics sort of a narrative storyline. Your hand moves across the page like a story does, like you read across the page. Computers are digital, and your body is not mimicking a story. Now, I don't know if anybody's done any research on this, but to me, the digital part of a computer doesn't have that narrative feel that handwriting does.
Thank you very much.
And the other part about that too is I think handwriting, when I write in my journal, I might do diagrams and, you know, I put Post-its in there. It's sort of a collage of things that are. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Richard. Anne Marie, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, yes, thank you for your presentation. One of the questions that I have is I have a pretty good like regular writing practice that's task-focused, and you know, I've done journal writing in other areas of my life, in personal areas of my life, but I guess my question would be when I already feel like I'm doing so much else, how would I fit in journal writing? Like how often do you do it? What is your strategy for doing it regularly? Do you do it regularly the same time, you know, like with the regularity that you might do tasks to get an article out, like very, very task specific? I guess how do you approach the regular journal keeping?
Those are really good questions, and it often is a concern. Again, it's this idea of practice. Once you have it as a practice, it's hard to give it up. I have a what I call a professional journal, a journal I use in my professional life. I take it to all my meetings. I put down the names of the people that are at the meeting. I put the date, so at least I have a record that I've been at that meeting. So in that way, it's like a log. And then I'm writing as well. And if I have an idea, I use a two-column method. So in this little smaller column, I might put an idea there. Oh, this is a good idea. Why don't I do this? And I take it to conferences with me. And so then, so it's sort of integrated in my whole life. And that's what I teach my students to do. And so then that's one of the ways I fit it in. I teach in the Graduate School of Education, I teach research methods, but I require my students to keep a journal. And so they are acquainted, and when they write, I write. And as I said, since I'm writing, I'm also doing some of my own work as well. But I'm also modeling that this kind of writing is the kind of writing that sustains and also offers insight and surprise. I think that's one of the reasons I like to write in my journal, because I get surprised. Does that help?
Yeah, but I guess do you do it daily or?
I do. Yes, I certainly do it when I teach, and when I go to meetings. But I also do it daily. I do it in the morning. I spend about actually a half an hour in the morning writing in my journal, and that's some of that's personal. That's a different journal. That's more like my personal journal, but. Lately, since I've been writing so much, and I have the second edition of my rubrics book I have to finish by January, I'm writing a lot about that. Well, what do I think about it? You know, what do I need to do next? Sometimes it's a to-do list. It's sort of I'm working on that in my personal journal so that it becomes a way for me to converse with myself, motivate myself, figure out what I need to do. And Joanne Cooper, the other person who wrote the book with me, both of us, you know, use it that way as kind of it generates what we're thinking about at the time. And does that help?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Anne-Marie.
Oh, there's a few more,
okay.
It looks like.
Bertha?
Quite a few. Bertha? Did you say you're going to Bertha?
Yes. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is such a fantastic workshop. I've learned so much, and I'm so glad that I am. You've affirmed a lot of things I had begun thinking through. I started a journal haphazard, but I think I now take it up more seriously. I just did it thinking I just needed a place to put ideas that were coming out, a lot of them, but now I can see that I need to be strategic in my use of it. So
mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for just giving us tips on that. One of the things that I really struggle with, I don't know what to do really, is perfectionism and the writing apprehension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's a big one.
As you were just sharing, it just hit me that on conversation I'm having with myself over the past couple of months about I'm being too slow and has increased my apprehension, and it has to do with my perfectionism. I don't know if you have any tips in breaking this block.
First of all, I want to applaud you for looking at some of those dispositions, in traits that actually have a very positive side in some ways, because someone said you need your perfectionist during the last couple of weeks before you produce your article. You send it off, but you don't need your perfectionist when you're starting an article, because you don't. I thought that was good advice. Robert Boyce actually said that. And he's done years and years, 30 years worth of work on academic writing, on how to help faculty be more productive. But the other thing, I'm going to tell you a little journal technique, is to have a dialogue with perfectionism. It's going to sound crazy. And see what perfectionism says to you, because dialogue is a very powerful journal writing activity and also an activity that promotes insight into, because perfectionism has a role. It has a positive role, but it also has a negative role. And it's best to know like I know my impatience. In fact, I give her a name, Irma. So, you know, you may not be as silly as I am about things like that, but it makes it more fun. And, you know, you have a perfectionist, but, you know, she doesn't have to be around all the time. You can tell her to go away. You don't need her right now. You can use her later. She's still a good part of you. So I'm being a little silly about it, and I know, I hope that you take that in good stride. But
I am.
Okay, good, good. All right.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bertha. All right, Danielle, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, Hello, Danielle. This is Danielle Joy Davis. We briefly met at a conference a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay, at POD, yeah.
Yes, yes, I presented on writing groups.
Right, right.
Yes.
How are you? Yes.
Good,
yes, I'm
you.
Curious about you. You're doing some very interesting work on writing groups, so I'm curious.
Well, thank you. Yes, you know, I'm really interested in what you said about journaling because I also have my students journal, and I was wondering, when you journal in the classroom and have your students journal, how much time do you have the students journal? And also, I was curious, do you guide them in journaling? Like, do you offer suggestions on what they might journal about at all, or is it pretty much free writing?
Well, I do several things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I do is, first of all, I teach them free writing.
Okay.
How to free write, which is a practice of getting words down on the page no matter what, even if you don't want to write, you write, I want to write, I don't want to write. What am I writing about? Why am I writing this? Who says I have anything to say? You know, anything. So that, I teach them free writing. And usually I start with, you know, 5 or 6 minutes of that in the beginning of the term, and then I might move to 10 maybe at the beginning of class. And the people I work with, it allows, they really like it. It becomes, you know, get the dust off the road. They are able to, the students, most of my students are teachers coming back, and it allows them to kind of be present in the class. And so that's really nice for them. Plus, I feel it gives them a skill, it gives them a resource that they can use later after they leave my class. I hope that they get something out of it. And then I write with them. You know, I write in my journal. I take out my journal and I write. I'm not arranging papers. I'm not doing anything else. So I'm modeling for them, but I'm also getting in some of my own writing. You know, sometimes it's really interesting that way, but it is a powerful model for them. And then your other question was, you said that you were interested about how much time I spend on it. Oh, and other activities, like the one I suggested in dialogue. I teach that to my students. And sometimes I use that when they have to write a paper, and I have them write a dialogue with the ideas that they're writing in there for their paper. Or I'll have them do a focused free write, which is kind of like a knowledge dump about everything they know about that topic. And questions, knowledge, concerns, excitements, things they don't know, things they want to know, why they're doing it, and just sort of throw all that out on the page. And that's another way I use it in class is, and then they have it in their journal, but I never read their journals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll do several things. One, I'll do what is called power grading because the issues of privacy are so important with journals. And I'll just look, kind of flip through their journal and say, oh, you've got 20 pages. That looks like you're keeping a journal. That sort of, you know, because I don't really want to read it. First of all, I have to read their handwriting. Second of all, I want them to have this as a private growth space for them. But I have them photocopy 2 pages out of their journal and write a meta reflection at the end of the term. I actually type 2 of them. And these meta reflections become a way for them to read their journal and also see their own growth.
Interesting. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's nice to talk to you, Danielle.
You too.
Thank you, Danielle.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Yvonne.
question about journaling. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I enjoyed the presentation.
Thank you.
It possible to get the references for in your PowerPoint presentation, or is it easier to Google, like Sylvia and Belch and...
Oh, those references, certainly.
Yes. Yes.
Those are a great, yeah. You can become a student of writing. I have a whole shelf full of books on writing just because I was going to figure this thing out, you know.
Okay.
Yes, you can get those references. Actually, what I would like to do is I have a private wiki to which you have to be invited, but everyone who's signed up for this this conference, I'm going to put you on the wiki. And on there are these strategies and also some of the handouts that I use, like text structure analysis and also the templates are there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can use the materials on there, and you can be part of that wiki.
Oh, great. Thank you.
And, you know, and make comments if you want, or add references if you want. A wiki is a collaborative workspace. So
yes.
I'm actually moving. The reason it isn't public is that I'm moving towards writing a book on this. And so I don't want all of it, you know, I don't want other people to grab my ideas.
Sure.
But I want to share them and get feedback on them, okay? So thanks. Great questions. Thank you.
Thank you. The other question is, again, on the journaling. And, you know, I just finished my dissertation, and I thought, okay, well, I can talk about this conversation kind of thing. But I probably would want to do some reading and then do the writing. I mean, that doesn't seem like that's the methodology that you're suggesting. So
in terms of what? You mean in terms of getting articles, writing articles?
Yes, yes. I want to do the professional journaling, and I'm assuming it's on the content, that the subject content that you're doing, the professional
journaling. Well, yeah, it can be. Mostly it's a gathering place for all the ideas and experiences I have, and it could be on that. It could be on other work I'm going to do in the future. You know, so I go to a conference and I go to a session. Like I went to Danielle Joy Davis's session, and I wrote some of the things that she's been doing in her writing groups. And it's a way for me to have it all in one place. That's the one great advantage of keeping a journal. Now, sometimes when I'm in a writing project, I'll get a little mini journal, and it'll only be about that, just because I want to kind of track that one thing. But usually, generally everything's in the big journal, professional journal.
And so, but you don't intersperse your writing with maybe an article that you've read or something like that?
No, those will be in there too, yes.
Okay.
Yes, that will be in there. But there's, you know, one of my friends says, well, you have to have this huge survey of the literature and then you write. And I think it's both of those.
Uh-huh.
That you should still be writing at the same time you're reading. Writing and reading are very important together, because you'll lose your voice if you only read. And you've got to acknowledge what you already know, and that's what writing does, and what you care about in that this array of research that's out there. So I strongly suggest that you that you write and read at the same time, so that you're gathering ideas, you know, really important ideas, but you are also also writing about them and what is your take on them, what do they mean to you, and how are you going to use this article. And I also suggest that you find an article. I always think there's a good ways to find a kind of a model article. Like if there's an article, you're writing case study. So find an article about a case study. Someone wrote a case study. And figure out how they wrote it. How did they, what is the structure of that article? And do an analysis of it. That's a text structure analysis business. And try to figure out how do they write about a case study? How do they structure the article? How much voice is in there? And see how your work matches onto that. It'll save you a lot of time.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Yvonne. Does anyone else have a question? Just press 1 on your phone keypad to be put into the question queue. Okay. Well, I see no one else has any questions right
now. Russell is just has a green.
Yeah. We do have a couple of questions that were emailed beforehand, so I can throw a couple of those out there.
Uh-huh.
One is, if there was one strategy that you felt was the most important to your success, what was it?
Oh, boy. That's an interesting question. I think becoming a student of writing gave me control and gave me ideas and power, and that's what I needed. I needed to have some things to do, actions, counting, charts, you know, words, time, something like that, journal keeping, free writing, anything, but just kind of trying to make this a strategic problem and take advice from wherever I could get it.
Thank you. Another question, is writing a book different from writing a journal article, and if so, how?
Okay. Well, actually, I prefer writing books over writing journal articles myself, and one of the reasons is that a book is a big project, and it takes a while to do it, and it really comes out of having done a lot of other work, a lot of thinking. The journal keeping book came out of, I teach a class in journal keeping in the summer, and along with Joanne Cooper, and we've did lots and lots of workshops on journal keeping, and we did roundtables on journal keeping, so we had a lot of background knowledge when we wrote that book, and the same thing with rubrics. But the books, I like the structuring this large project and finding the little pieces that fit in, and it's very exciting to me to write a book. So,
okay, one more. Okay. What if I can't find an accountability group on my campus, or I don't want to admit to others I have a problem with my writing?
Okay, so that's always a hard thing in the academy, because one of the most important things that you need to do is to write and to continue to write, because it's part of the name of the game, but also because it gets you into the conversation. So I would go to conferences and at conferences join some special interest groups and find some people who are probably at about the same place you are, like the woman who called who was just coming out of her dissertation, Yvonne, and moving into journal writing, writing journal articles. Go to a conference and find some peers. Chat with them at a small special interest group and hook up with them and commit to calling each other or emailing each other at the same time each week as to making goals for the next week and then sort of tracking them. And you don't have to meet all your goals. It's just important to write those goals and then to see how well you accomplish them and keep a record of that, and you'll get better and better and better at meeting those goals. But an accountability group seems to be a very important part of jump-starting your writing.
Thank you, Danelle.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.